zookeeper and Cassandra. And so what I'm going to talk about is what we're actually doing very briefly. And then I'll talk to you a little bit about the Nutanix environment, because you need to know some of that to make sense of what I'm going to be talking about. Then try to motivate what I'm doing, which is helping them to create a distributed filer of some sort, and look at the approach that we're taking around this filer. Then dive into the important aspect of what we're doing, which is sharding this file system across multiple nodes, and then look at what we're doing in Samba, some of the, very briefly at least, some of the mods we need in Samba and the Samba VFS module that we're using, and talk about some conclusions at the end. So what am I doing? So I'm leading a small team of engineers at Nutanix, where we are trying to construct a scale-out filer, a scale-out NAS that tries to avoid using a shared file system. And it's almost a shared nothing system. As you'll see in a little while, there is some information that we do have to share between the nodes, but we're trying to keep it down. And as a result, we're doing clustering in a different way, i.e. we're not using CTDB for our clustering. It's based around CentOS 6, but that's simply because a lot of people in the Bay Area who are doing this sort of thing are using the CentOS, which is essentially RHEL 6. And we are using ZFS on Linux for this particular task, which gives us a few things out of the box that just work and make our lives easier. And we're using Zookeeper and Cassandra to do certain parts of what we need to do. So okay, on to Nutanix. Now, some of you may or may not may be aware of Nutanix, but very, very briefly, Nutanix is a sells what it calls a hyperconverged platform, and that hyperconverged platform is a cluster of at least three nodes. Today, it's a maximum of 32 nodes, which I think I mentioned in a subsequent slide. And we tend to suggest that about 24 nodes is the maximum you want to use, but I've seen people go up higher than that. Each node in the cluster provides storage, compute, and memory. And so as you add more nodes to the cluster, you get more storage. And we run a in an interesting fashion. Each node runs a hypervisor, and that hypervisor can be ESX or KVM or Hyper-V. And then we have a control VM running on each node in the cluster, and that forms our cluster in there, and that control VM runs Zookeeper, Cassandra, and a bunch of other services. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a short while. And then there will be the user VMs that the customer is running on that, on the Nutanix cluster. And those user VMs may be virtual desktop infrastructure VMs, or it may be converged servers that they have brought into the one node, or those sorts of things. So some of this I've already mentioned. Storage. We use both rotating and SSDs for storage, and we implement a distributed file system already within the Nutanix OS called NDFS, but it is focused around providing virtual disk infrastructure, and as a result, it provides a medium number of large objects, i.e. 10 to the 5 to 10 to the 6 sort of objects within that distributed file system. And they're large objects, typically 10 to the 9 plus bytes, because they're VDisks associated with VMs, although they can be smaller. But the basic object that it is providing is a VDisk. And I'll say a little bit more about some of those things in a short while. NDFS provides native today either RF2 or RF3, which means that you have two copies of your data somewhere in the cluster, or three copies of your data somewhere in the cluster, depending upon how you've configured each of the containers that you are using. And However, we store small objects and we store metadata in Cassandra. And we have made, so small objects means if your VM's vDisk is less than a half a megabyte, it stays in Cassandra and is not committed to our NDFS. But of course, Cassandra does do back things to memory, to disk as well. Yes, Michael. Okay. Cassandra and ZooKeeper. Yes. Cassandra is a distributed database that is not an SQL database, and it was developed by a couple of people at Facebook a bunch of years ago, including Avinash Lakshman, who is the CEO of Hedvig, for those who've heard of Hedvig. But it's a distributed database, and so we use that. Nutanix uses that as its metadata store, and we have Cassandra. The original Cassandra did not have strong consistency. It had eventual consistency, and it uses consistent hashing to ensure that the data can be accessed. Consistent hashing and replication. ZooKeeper is used for cluster formation and cluster management, and for configuration distribution. It is a distributed configuration, sort of a database that keeps everything pretty much in memory, although it does back it to storage as well. And so we use those two facilities. So as I say, there's ZooKeeper for distributed configuration and cluster support. ZooKeeper then has support for elections. It has support for a whole bunch of things, health monitoring, and then we have extended ZooKeeper, and we've extended Cassandra, as I say, and those components have a BSD license, I believe. Right. Cassandra or ZooKeeper? ZooKeeper does, yes. In some sense, it's got a distributed lock manager, and you can do test and set-like operations or... no, that's not. Although some of the facilities do use ZooKeeper for that, but we personally on the Filer team are only using it for distributed configuration management and leader elections. Yes, it's already there. Yes, correct. We also use Google's protobufs, which is just a standard, simple way to do RPCs from node to node. And protobufs, the standard protobufs, have support for C++, Python, and Java. And there are other projects that support protobufs in C and one other language that one or two other languages that I can't remember. As I mentioned, we support ESX, KVM, and Hyper-V, although today clusters have to be all one hypervisor, but in the future we will be able to support mixed ESX and KVM clusters. And the nodes that you purchase ship with KVM, because VMware took away our right to pre-install ESX on our nodes because they felt that we were competing too strongly with them. As a result, we had to develop a special installer VM that we then used to install the customer-supplied ISOs in the case of ESX on the nodes. So that's a little bit about the Nutanix environment. Now, we've had a lot of customers ask us for NAS support, and some of those customers want NFS. A much larger number of customers, it seems, want SIFS/SMB support, and a lot of that is because a lot of Nutanix boxes go into VDI infrastructures where there are thousands of virtual desktop VMs running across a cluster, for example. And so they want support for home directories and profiles, but they also want general shares as well. Then there are the crazies out there who want shared NFS and SIFS on the same file system. And that's one I'm not looking forward to supporting. But that's, sorry? it's not one that I want to support because of the problems.
Actually, it's not up to them.
That's
32, you want SMB for POSIX 1 NFS.
Right. Actually, that's true. And my experience in the Bay Area is that a lot of these startups, they get a bunch of guys fresh out of college who only know NFS, and they say, you know, we've got this great idea and we're going to rule the world with NFS. And then they get to market and they find, shit, nobody wants NFS. They all want SIFs. Now, I'm exaggerating, of course, because there is a market segment that does want NFS, and that tends to be things like technical computing, EDA, and those sorts of things, whereas the more general market wants SIFs. So as I mentioned before, NDFS is optimized for VDISCs, VMDKs, VHDs, etc., and it's not good at handling the requirements what a filer requires, where you have millions to tens of millions to hundreds of millions of files on a NAS with an average size maybe of 100K. NDFS is not good at handling that level of metadata load, so we had to do something different. And we already support SIFs within the NDFS or within the infrastructure that Nutanix provides, but it is focused at Hyper-V support and it consumes port 445 in these things that I mentioned before, these CVMs, these control VMs. Where is that pointer? It's disappeared, forget it. Within those control VMs that are on there, we already support SIFs, and so we've had to go to a somewhat different approach, or we use a different approach to handle that. Now, some of the requirements that were placed on us for the goals are we had to provide a scale-out service, and there are two aspects to that scale-out service. One is that as you add nodes to the cluster, more storage becomes available. But that's given to us by NDFS. When you add more nodes, there's more storage. And NDFS, whenever you write, NDFS automatically replicates the data to another node. And the segments that are being written anyway would never go to the same two nodes. So it spreads the data out amongst the nodes in the cluster. And that gives us some help with the approach that we're using that I'll mention in a short while, especially when it comes to home directories and profile shares, because we don't have to worry all that much about balancing the storage across the nodes. And so we chose to use, we also need to support multiple filers per cluster, the notion that there might be more than one of these filers, more than one of these NASs in the cluster. And so you're probably getting the impression already that what we chose to do was to create a cluster of VMs on this Nutanix cluster and then make that a single member server in Active Directory, and then as a result, we can have multiple of these clusters. We also had to provide high availability, something that does better than VMware's HA, for example. We had to support disaster recovery, DR, and we had to support Windows previous versions because a lot of people like Windows previous versions, although there are some customers out there who already have their own backup and restore facilities and they don't want users using Windows previous versions, and so they'd prefer that that not be available at all to their users. There are some customers who only want administrators to be able to use Windows previous versions. And there are other customers who want to allow everybody to use Windows previous versions. So we will be implementing something. We will obviously use start with one of the shadow copy VFS modules that are out there and modify it, and we'll probably add an additional parameter that allows you to control access in that fashion. And it's all based around ZFS snapshots, so we get that level of snapshotting for free, which kind of creates some tension, however, because NDFS provides snapshotting and cloning at a VDISC level, and I'll talk a little bit more about what we're doing. So I think I've already mentioned a cluster of VMs. We will support SMB 2.1 and above simply because of the version of Samba that we're using. We use ZFS on Linux, and we use iSCSI, or at least that's the current plan, to access these VDISCs on any node in the cluster. Sorry, yes, Tom. Right, so this is separate. There will still be the original Hyper-V support.
Well, this is for user applications.
Yes.
Accessing
yes.
Files.
Yes. And in particular, for VDIs and those sorts of things. So we will use a bunch of iSCSI accessible VDISCs, and we'll create a zpool across a bunch of VDISCs that's thinly provisioned in the Nutanix environment, and we can increase overall storage available to the filer by adding more nodes to the cluster. Or if, and the current plan is that each of those VDISCs will be have a maximum size of 10 terabytes, and so a single node would have access to 40 terabytes. Once that's exhausted, we can add more VDISCs to the zpool and increase that to, say, 80 terabytes or beyond. Okay, so this is what the solution then will look like. So each of the, or some fraction rather, of the nodes in the cluster will run a filer VM now, and that filer VM will run Samba, and those collection of filer VMs will form their own cluster using ZooKeeper. And sometime in the future, we expect this to span multiple clusters, because we have customers out there who have 50 or more clusters and they want to minimize the administrative overhead. And rather than dealing with the same information across 50 clusters, they would rather that we create a single filer across those 50 clusters. Now, that'll be an interesting experience, but that's the approach that we're planning on doing. And our basic architecture consists of sharding the root of a share across these multiple NVMs. And so in this diagram, then, the intent here is that share one will actually exist on all three nodes. And if you have this collection of directories, some of those directories will be on the first NVM, NVM for NAS VM, some will be on the second, and some will be on the third. And the shared information that we need to support this will be kept in Cassandra and ZooKeeper. Correct. And in fact, essentially only sharded today, only sharded at one point, which is the root of the share. Yes. And that's for a couple of reasons. Now, we think that this is not going to, because the storage is essentially distributed amongst all nodes in the cluster, we don't think that this is going to cause storage capacity problems. However, there may be performance problems if one node gets too heavily loaded. But in a VDI environment, which is where this is initially aimed at, you generally will have fairly balanced load on each of the nodes in the cluster, especially if we are trying to ensure that if a user's VDIs are on the node that contains this VM, that his file, his directory, his homes directory, and his profiles directory are on the NVM that's on the same node, then we can bound the workload that any one NVM would have to deal with. And so the approach that we're using to do this is DFS referrals. So what happens, of course, is that a client out there goes to a node, and using standard DNS round robin, they are distributed to any node in the cluster initially. That node at the root of the share, it looks that information up in Cassandra, and if that directory is not on that node, it simply sends back path not covered. The client then asks for a referral, and we send them to the correct node where that directory is. And this works reasonably well for VDI sorts of workloads, because, and I'll point out why. There are some issues with that, and I'll point out why later on. And this is a subject that I'm trying to talk to Tom about in terms of protocol and things of that nature. So that's the basic approach that we use. Now, what are the benefits from our perspective? So the benefits are that we don't need a large-scale distributed or shared file system, like things like OCFS2 or those other distributed file systems, because there tends to be a bunch of complications associated with them and a lot of information to be distributed. With this approach, the client essentially takes care of, we in coordination with the client, take care of getting the client to talk to the correct node in the cluster, that the node that contains their data. So we think it reduces the need for shared locking information. That information is only needed at the sharding point. We don't think storage imbalances are going to be a problem, although we will do some work on making redistributing or rebalancing the storage available. We suspect it will be more of a performance imbalance, and it works well, we believe, for VDI-style workloads, and then we'll work on other workloads out there. So, and why only shard at the root? We currently only plan to shard at the root of a share because it simplifies the code that we have to write, especially the VFS module. And it reduces the number of VFS referrals, although the number here is very, very small. But reducing the number of VFS referrals is worthwhile because clients have a maximum of about 200,000 that they can keep in their caches. At some time in the future, however, the company is pushing us to do DFS referrals at any point in the file system because they really like this notion of consistent hashing, and they seem to have heard about consistent hashing. There's lots of execs in the company who've heard that Cassandra does consistent hashing, and it's kind of like if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail in some sense, and they want us to do consistent hashing as well, but there are some issues around that. And we think this will work well for VDI support. Now, there still is a requirement to provide some shared information, configuration information in particular, and those of you who have used the registry backend for the smb.conf will have experienced how useful it is to be able to share configuration information amongst all nodes in the cluster. Some of the information in the secrets.tdb also needs to be shared amongst all of the nodes because this collection of VMs, this collection of NVMs is pretending to be a single member server to Active Directory, and so it has a single machine account. And of course, we have to share the metadata at the sharding point, and that's things like mapping, stat-like info, locking information, those sorts of things. And my earlier comment about strong consistency applies here as well, because as soon as you enter metadata on one node, it has to be visible to other nodes in the cluster. You can't use eventual consistency, but fortunately for us, Nutanix has modified Cassandra to support strong consistency. You don't have to use strong consistency for all tables, but we have support for strong consistency. Okay, so Samba, so configuration in ZooKeeper is one of those areas that's of interest to us, and we want all of the NVMs to be able to see the same configuration data because they need to see the same collection of shares and the same collection of configuration information. And it's similar to as I mentioned, the current registry approach, keeping the smb.conf in the registry in Samba. And I posted some patches earlier in the year that allow Samba to directly use ZooKeeper. However, there are a bunch of problems with that. One of them is that the ZooKeeper client maintains a TCP connection to the local ZooKeeper daemon, the one that's participating in this ZooKeeper cluster, and Samba uses a forking model, and I had to come up with ways to reestablish those connections to ZooKeeper when you forked a new client. But possibly the biggest problem is that when a config change occurs in the model that I initially proposed, every SMBD would be pounding on ZooKeeper, on the local ZooKeeper daemon, to retrieve the same information. And so we've moved to a different different approach. And I think that that is, yes, so that is demonstrated a little bit in this diagram. This gives a little bit of an idea of our overall system architecture. These things, these control VMs, are these things that Nutanix runs anyway. And when someone wants to create a filer, there's a thing living on the in the CVM, a service living in the CVMs that say that deploy all of the NVMs. So we talk to the hypervisor and we ask it to deploy these NVMs. Once these things are started, then we will have Samba running on there. We will have a service running on the NVM, and Zookeeper and Cassandra running on there as well. And this service here will be responsible for talking to Zookeeper and Cassandra. And one of the useful features that Zookeeper has is that you can place watches on nodes in the Zookeeper information. So if something changes, you'll get a callback. And when that callback occurs, if a configuration change occurs, for example, we get a callback over here, and we can then go and retrieve the configuration change once from Zookeeper and then send a SIGHUP to the SMBDs, which will all then use protobufs, RPCs, to retrieve that information from our service. And then we think that that's going to reduce the amount of load on Zookeeper and Cassandra, and also avoid having to be continually probing Zookeeper and having to use the different programming environments that Zookeeper provides. And in particular, Zookeeper wants to do things natively in a multi-threaded fashion, and we want to try and stay away from that as far as possible in our Samba VFS and in Samba, etc. Okay, keep going. We also need to store some secrets information in Zookeeper, we believe, because each of these NVMs uses the same machine account, and we have we've added some code to Samba, but then somebody recently told me, I think it was Andrew, told me that the Samba 4 code already contains something that allows you to add SPNs. But because of the way we're doing things, we need a separate SPN for each NVM in the cluster, as well as an SPN for the total cluster. Each NVM then also needs access to that secrets information. And we will likely keep that in some encrypted fashion, but we haven't decided in Zookeeper, that is, but we haven't decided quite what the mechanism is there yet. And we have to deal with races that occur when you change the machine account password and somebody has just retrieved a ticket. Yeah.
So we are seeing this with normal cluster Samba as well. That's it. Plans to make that work reliably, even facing crashes on
both
sides.
Oh, excellent. So I will, yes, because that was I was anticipating a fair amount of pain around this particular item, and so if he's already thought about it and has a scheme for dealing with it, that will be great.
So I mean, the process, all this S channel E whatever, that's solved basically with CTDB, and the other one is password changes. The idea is that he invents a new password, stores this in secrets, and then changes. And when something crashes in between, he can try both.
Oh, so it just leverages the current mechanism where we store the old password anyway for like 24 hours or whatever it is, 10 hours or something. So, okay, that's pretty neat. So, as I say, we'll have to deal with those races, and it looks like there's a standard approach. This diagram was just designed to motivate that problem.
But if you really want to have one single machine account, you need a non-persistent CTDB database for the session setup and S setup.
Right, so we were planning on storing that information in Zookeeper, and we have to make modifications to secrets.c.
Too slow?
Too slow?
Yeah.
Okay, we may have to find another mechanism to do that. But the issue here, the race here, is that if one of these nodes of ours changes the machine account password and the other node hasn't received that new machine account password information and a client gets a ticket and presents that ticket to us, we've got no way of decrypting the ticket and we will cause client pain. So we have to have a solution to that. I'll have to talk to you later on, Volker, about why it's too slow, etc. Now, so we also have to store metadata, as I mentioned, in Cassandra. And to do that, we definitely need strong consistency, because the approach that we are taking, especially around creates, if you're creating a new directory or a file at the sharding point, at the root of the share, as soon as we see a create request for a new file, we enter that data into Cassandra and we defer creating the directory until it gets to the remote node where that object is supposed to reside. And so to avoid a bunch of races and to make sure our lives are easy, we need strong consistency, because other nodes in the cluster have to be able to see that new information in Cassandra as soon as we've made that information or put that information in there. And we will be storing a mapping, obviously, for any directory. We have to have a mapping telling our VFS module where that should go. We have to store some stat info, mostly the four times that Windows worries about, DOS attributes, and we will have to store some locking information in Cassandra as well, so that we can handle share mode locks. And byte range locks tend to be less of a problem, especially for directories, but we need to be able to handle share mode locks at the sharding point. And we need to store a security descriptor for the root of the share, and we need to store share level ACLs in there as well, so that we can simulate all the right sorts of things. Now, we have coded up a VFS module, and it's currently being modified to implement all of the things that we need. And most of our changes are in the VFS layer. Some of our changes will be some minor changes in Samba. Nutanix's approach to these sorts of things is that in our code base, we have a separate directory that contains third-party modules that we have to make available to customers, that contains GPL'd models or GPL'd code that we have to make available to our customers. And that actually ships on the box. And so you can access all of this third-party code on the box itself, from the box. There's an HTTP-based directory. So all of the changes that we make here, including the VFS module, et cetera, will be available to customers as soon as it ships. RealPath does heavy duty for us, because RealPath is the first function in the VFS module that gets called when Samba is dealing with files and paths. And as soon as RealPath sees that this path contains a node that is on another, that is on another node, then we generate a path not covered. Now, if you've looked at the VFS at all, you'll know that RealPath has a POSIX interface. It expects to return an ERNO, and there is no ERNO called ePath not covered. So we've modified Samba to add ePath not covered, and I've got some further comments about that further along. But so as soon as RealPath sees that this is a file or a directory that is on another node in the cluster, it returns path not covered, and that starts the process to get the client to talk to another node. But stat is just as important. There are some cases where we have to return, I believe, stat information, and in particular, when the client is doing a query directory and we're trying to return information about a directory, if it's at the sharding point, we have to retrieve that information from Cassandra to populate in the responses that go back. And so our VFS module has to sit below any other modules in the stack that we are using for, because it has to be able to perform all the operations needed for the sharding point for remote directories. But for local directories, everything just gets passed straight down to the file, straight down to Samba, which then pushes it straight down to the file systems, to the file system, ZFS in this case. And so this is kind of what our VFS layering will look like. There will be other VFS modules sitting on top of us, like Acl under Xadder and Streams Depot. And on Thursday or Friday last week, Friday I think it was, I tested the Acl under Xadder module. I tested access control lists or security descriptors with our DFS referral code, DFS referral generating code, and everything worked out of the box. And so I was very glad that at least one piece of this is going to be easy. I think Streams is going to be easy as well. Then we will have our Nutanix shadow copy module, which is probably going to be modeled straight on one of the other two shadow copy modules there, but with some additions of our own to handle the features that we need to handle. And then our main VFS module, and that will, if the path refers to something that needs, that is in the, at the sharding point, then, and that needs to, or rather it will always refer to Cassandra for the names at the sharding point. And if Cassandra says that that folder is local, then we will pass it down to Samba. If it's not local, then we will have to generate those DFS referrals or send back path not covered and get the client to ask for a DFS referral. Now, along the way, we've come to know, or at least I've come to know, that there are some problems in the Samba VFS today. Some of them are cosmetic sorts of problems, like there's a lack of consistency in the error return codes. And here, what I mean by this is that some VFS functions return Unix-like error codes or Unix error codes, and some of them return Windows error codes. And I would prefer that they all return Windows error codes. So I'm looking at trying to modify the VFS for the 4.3 timeframe to be consistent about all of the error codes. In addition, those VFS functions that deal with files and directories don't always get given an FSP. An FSP is an internal Samba structure that describes a file. And in some cases, of course, it's appropriate that in fact, I would contend that all of the file dealing VFS functions should be given an FSP. Directory handling is one of those at the moment that doesn't get an FSP, and some things like rename, I believe, don't get FSPs as well. And that makes our lives in our VFS module harder, because we would like to be able to store stuff in the use FSP extensions to keep our own information, to track things. And the third problem was that there is a lack of documentation telling you under which circumstances some of these VFS functions are going to be called. And so you really have to go rummaging around in the code to figure out when these are going to be called. And RealPath was one of those. It turns out that RealPath simplifies our lives greatly, because once you come to the knowledge that RealPath is called first by Samba whenever it's dealing with files, then that gives you a very powerful entry point for doing certain things. And it would have been nice if we didn't have to stumble across this by mistake when we were debugging problems, but that then simplified our VFS module. There are some other issues, I think, in the form of a lack of exposed interfaces, and in particular, a big one of those is the lack of an interface for share mode and byte range locks so that we can push those into, put them somewhere else other than a TDB where Samba normally wants to put those. Now, you know, it's possible to do that by modifying the Samba code, but my view is that as far as possible, we should avoid modifying the Samba code because that makes our lives easier when we want to upgrade to 4.3 or 4.2.4 or whatever that is, instead of having to track down all our changes and make sure that they still apply. So we haven't as yet. It's going to be on my to-do list when I get back. But I think we'll probably take the same approach that Panzura took, and that is we will modify the point at which it's being asked for and add a VFS function. But I don't think, having talked to Jeremy, I don't think that's the right way to do it. It would be better to have a pluggable share mode interface module. But we don't have that at the moment. And share level ACLs is another one, I believe, that's not exposed through the VFS layer, and so we'll have to expose it in some fashion. Now, it would be remiss of me if I didn't point out that there were some problems with the approach that we're taking. And two of those are that Windows clients do not like it if you try to rename an object that is a target of a DFS referral. And you get back access denied or invalid device, depending upon whether you do it through the Explorer or you do it through DOS prompt or what have you. And similarly with trying to delete a directory, you get back things like directory not empty or something of that nature. Now, you can understand why Windows refuses to do that, and that's because as far as a client is concerned, this object that we're dealing with, that we're trying to rename, is actually in two places. It's on the original node it went to and got a DFS referral from, and it's on the target node where the DFS referral points to. And if it did the rename on one of the other, something would be left behind, something would be out of sync. But in our environment, what's actually happening is we have a single namespace and we're using DFS referrals to move the client to where it should be. And what we would like to see is an FSCTL or something like that and some client changes, but somebody has told me that it's going to be hard to get client changes. We'll see whether that is possible at all. However, the good news is that there is a workaround. Sorry?
Depends on which client.
True. The good news is that there is a workaround, and that workaround is that the customers can go to the node where this directory or name is hosted, and you can find that in the properties dialog box for an object in the Explorer by just going to the DFS tab and find the node that it's on. And in a And in the cut and paste, you'll have to tell me how to do that because I couldn't figure out how to cut and paste that damn thing.
Well, there's some window you can
cut. Okay, but where was I going with this? So, so there is a workaround, and especially in a VDI environment, the normal users would never be renaming their home directory or their profiles directory. It's only administrators who would want to do that. There is another problem, and that is new folder. We will have to, whenever someone creates new folder, we would have to make sure that it goes on different nodes to ensure that there's some reasonable balance in where the folders are. But again, in a VDI and environment, new folder is not something that people create frequently. That's being done by the logon processing code and so forth. So we think it's an interesting approach to scale out NAS, and it's certainly proving to be workable, and our current demo code seems to work reasonably well. Samba makes a lot of this easy to do, and we're having fun, again, doing this sort of stuff. And right, that's all I had to talk about. If there are any questions, we can take those now.
Thank you, Richard. Are there questions? Comments? There were a few questions already during your talk. Okay.
So, Richard, this virtual Samba cluster that you run, how many instances of it do you run? Why do you run it clustered?
So we run a minimum of three because we think that if we only ran a single node in the cluster, then that node would become overpowered and customers may not want to devote the amount of resources to a single node. But of course, they do have to then deal with the fact that there's a VM running on each of the nodes or on some fraction of the nodes in the cluster, a minimum of three consuming resources. But we also want to do that for HA purposes. So if one of these nodes or VMs fails, then because we're using iSCSI, we can take over that collection of vDisks for the zpool on another node in the cluster, import the zpool, and then bring up that service on that node.
You're running iSCSI. Okay, so those disks are not internal to the compute blades. They're on.
They could be internal to the compute to the nodes, but they are made accessible to the hypervisor. And this is a confusing story, but they're made accessible to the hypervisor through our control VM, which sees the storage then as NFS accessible storage. But we want to, for the purposes of providing the file system that these NAS VMs are running, we're accessing it through iSCSI to make our lives easier.
Okay, well, my head hurts, so I'll stop asking that question.
Great. Although there's some argument from other people in the company about whether or not we should do that. And part of that argument is that our control VMs, controller VMs already provide HA by telling the hypervisor to change the place where it gets access to NFS storage. And because the files are accessible through any controller VM in the cluster, we can provide that sort of high availability.
Okay, thank you once more. I think we'll get on so we keep a little bit on schedule.